Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
It's a Wednesday morning, middle of the week. It's August 3rd, 2022. Hope you're doing well. Teresa Tomeo here. Much to discuss on today's program. We're going to start out right after the break, taking a look at this new book published by Ignatius Press, Ignatius.com. You can also find it at the Religious Catalog here at EWTN, The Genesis of Gender. This is a really important book by Dr. Abigail Vivali. I'm very much interested in talking with her because it's a dynamic book that really takes a look at what's been happening the last 10, 15 years and how this developed so quickly in terms of this major agenda. And speaking of agenda, it reminds me that if you're going to get a copy of this book, then you definitely need as something to accompany this book and dive into this topic for some great background, the Gender Agenda documentary that EWTN has produced, which you can find also at our website at EWTN.com. We need to know what's happening here so we can stand up against it. And it's a huge story that keeps coming out. We even discussed this a little bit yesterday with Dr. Jennifer Robeck Morris from the Ruth Institute. Now, on the bright side, there are some folks over in Europe recognizing the damage this agenda is doing, especially to young people. So Dr. Abigail will address that as well. Again, her book is The Genesis of Gender from our friends at Ignatius Press. And then, of course, it's a Wednesday. So you know what that means. Our very own Joan Lewis from EWTN's Rome Bureau there. She joins us and with the latest on Vatican News and the Holy Father, how his trip went in Canada, and of course, now that he is back in Rome, how he's feeling, and the future travels that he appears to still have on the agenda, even though he has said, and he mentioned this on the plane on the way home, that he does intend to slow down. Let's take a quick look at the weather for you before we get into the news. On a Wednesday morning, dangerous heat continuing across much of the country today and then expanding into the Northeast on tomorrow on Thursday. Severe thunderstorms and the risk of flash flooding centered from lower Michigan to the mid-Mississippi Valley, and that's today. Elsewhere, elevated to critical fire weather conditions prevailing across the interior, Northwest, and into Montana. Right now, let's check the news for you on a Wednesday morning. You are listening to EWTN. It's August 3rd, 2022. Well, speaking of the weather, catastrophic flooding has Kentucky still reeling. Republican Senator Rand Paul telling Fox News the storms have taken a major toll on his state.
We're devastated for our friends and many families who I know personally up in eastern Kentucky. Nearly 40 people have perished in the flooding.
And now he says it's simply all hands on deck.
Our hearts go out and we're trying to do everything possible. We've got all of our staff out there trying to help coordinate and help get aid to people.
In addition to the fatalities, hundreds are still missing. The Kentucky governor says the heat will now be the next challenge the Commonwealth faces as cleanup efforts go on. The state has set up nearly a dozen cooling centers in areas without power due to the floods. Kansas voting 65-34% against the value than both pro-life amendment, a pro-abortion result, according to LifeNews.com, that came just weeks after the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. The amendment would have added language to the Kansas Constitution stating there is no right to an abortion or taxpayer-funded abortion. Although it would not ban abortions, it would allow the voter-elected state legislature to do so. Before and during the campaign over the amendment, abortion activists, according to Life News and other sources, engaged in violence, including vandalizing some churches. DetroitCatholic.com is reporting this morning that Archbishop Paul Russell, Detroit's newest auxiliary bishop, will refrain from public ministry following an allegation of sexual misconduct with a minor dating to his time as a priest in the Archdiocese of Boston some 30 years ago. It's an allegation the Archbishop strongly denies. A lawsuit filed August 1st in Massachusetts Suffolk County Superior Court accusing Russell of abusing a 12-year-old boy in 1989 and 90 during his time as associate pastor of Sacred Heart Parish in Massachusetts. The lawsuit also names the Archdiocese of Boston and another priest who was then pastor of Sacred Heart as defendants. In a statement, the Archdiocese of Detroit, which is not named in the lawsuit, said Archbishop Russell is shocked and saddened by the allegations that have been made and states they are without merit. The Federal Bureau of Investigation releasing photos of a suspect in the attempted firebombing of a pro-life pregnancy center June 30th in Nashville. Catholic News Agency says they're asking now for the public's help in identifying the suspect. The photos released by the FBI's Memphis field office showing an individual dressed in dark clothing with a hood. A photo of the person's car was also released to the public. It's unclear what model or make the car is. On June 30th at around 1:30 a.m., an individual throwing a Molotov cocktail through a window at Hope Clinic for Women. It did not explode, and the window has since been replaced. The words Jane's Revenge written on the clinic in graffiti and have since been cleaned off. More victim impact statements are being read in the Parkland, Florida school shooting sentencing trial. Gina Hoyer lost her son Luke in the massacre, and she recounted the candy and Valentine's Day card she left for him the night before.
That card and bag of Skittles sat on his bathroom counter for over a year. I could not move it, nor can I move anything in his room, which remains the same as it was the day he left it.
The jury has been instructed to not consider the victim impact statements as aggravating factors in whether they will recommend life in prison or the death penalty for Nicholas Cruz. Meanwhile, the commission created in response to that tragedy at the Parkland, Florida High School massacre finds there's still work to be done to make kids safer on campus. Pinellas County Sheriff's Office Lieutenant John Cease says in 2020 and 21, Madison County was doing the most threat assessments per capita in that state.
Orange County, they have approximately 200,000 students, which is 60,000 fewer than Broward County's 260,000 students. But Orange County conducted 1,100 threat assessments, while Broward County conducted 868.
Meanwhile, Broward Sheriff Gregory Tony says a tragedy at MSD taught them the importance of dispatching enough people and quickly.
Based on the nature of the call, the threat of the call, or what the anticipated result of the call is going to be, we would disperse small teams from throughout this entire county, at least the ones under my command, to go over into another jurisdiction that we handle to support it.
The dispatch system is run by the sheriff's office and the county government. Cliff Albert tells us a new study is showing there's a link apparently between financial health and the risk of developing dementia.
According to the findings, people who experience personal and neighborhood conditions such as low income, high unemployment, low car and home ownership rates, and household overcrowding were significantly more likely to develop dementia compared to individuals of better socioeconomic status, even those at high genetic risk. As one of the lead researchers put it, our findings suggest that social policies that enhance the financial well-being of low-wage workers, including increasing the minimum wage, may be especially beneficial for cognitive health. I'm Cliff Albert.
Household debt surpassing $16 trillion. It did so in the second quarter of this year as inflation continues to skyrocket. The $6.15 trillion figure was a $312 billion increase from the first quarter. And Lisa Taylor tells us more interest rate hikes could be on the table as inflation soars.
Speaking to CNBC, San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly noted Americans are still dealing with the effects of high prices. She explained the Fed's job is far from done because things that were affordable 6 months ago aren't now. Meantime, the Chicago Fed president is hoping another big rate hike doesn't have to happen. The Fed has been raising interest rates over the last few months in a bid to tame soaring inflation.
California's largest wildfire of the season is now blamed for 4 deaths, authorities confirming earlier yesterday that 2 more bodies have been found along the path of the massive McKinney fire. Earlier this week, 2 other bodies were discovered in a burned-out car. The local sheriff's office saying it appeared they were trying to flee the raging inferno. Cal Fire says the blame remains at 0% containment after burning through more than 56,000 acres. And Dina Kodiak reports the National Park Service, meanwhile, in California, is warning visitors to stay away from the world's tallest tree in California's Redwood National Park.
If caught, they could face a fine of $5,000 and up to 6 months of jail time. The 380-foot redwood named Hyperion is estimated to be around 500 to 600 years old. Park officials have tried to keep its location a secret since the tree was considered discovered in 2006. The enforcement is in an effort to protect the tree and the surrounding ecosystem from any damage while keeping visitors safe from getting hurt.
And wildfires are spreading across parts of Texas as well. Firefighters have now had to respond to almost 200 blazes over the past week. One of those is the Chalk Mountain Fire burning in Somerville County, south of Fort Worth, which has already destroyed at least 6,000 acres and damaged dozens of poles and other infrastructure. And in New York on the East Coast, Lisa G tells us water worries are growing on Long Island's East End due to the recent hot weather and not enough rain.
Suffolk County Water Authority Chairman Pat Halpin says mandatory restrictions are not yet in place, but 22 New York counties, including Nassau and Suffolk, are under a drought watch.
This is serious, and we need to change behavior today.
Officials are asking residents to stop all sprinkler use between midnight and 7 a.m., fearing the lack of water could hinder the work by local firefighters.
More Catholic Connection coming up. We'll be right back on a Wednesday morning.
Building the apostolate of the laity and leading in the new evangelization. Ave Maria Radio joins EWTN in spearheading the recovery of the American Catholic identity and equipping all Catholics to take co-responsibility for Christ's church.
This program is brought to you by the following nonprofit underwriter.
As Catholics, we are called to protect life at every stage, but our culture continues to impose threats against the sanctity of life, making the pro-life cause the preeminent social issue of our time. But there is hope. The Christ Medicus Foundation and CMF Bureau have partnered with one of the country's leading health care ministries to provide Catholics with a pathway to pro-life, Christ-centered health care. Support the culture of life and learn more about CMF Curo at MyCatholicHealthcare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to setonhome.org. setonhome.org.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I don't think people should have negative fears of God. But I think you should get a lump in your throat. You should feel excited. Suppose I was going to take you and introduce you to the Pope or to the president of some country or something. You might get a lump in your throat. Forget it. Every day, you, I, live and move and have our being in the presence of God. These are the class of feelings we should have, and we should have them to an intense degree if we really had the sight of Almighty God. These feelings are the feelings which we shall have if we realize His presence. And in proportion as we believe that He is present, we shall have them. And not to have them is not to realize, not to believe that God is present to us.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
This is a book you definitely want to grab and put in your home library, The Genesis of Gender by Dr. Abigail Favalli. And it's an excellent book, which really gives us an understanding and how to help people understand also what's going on in the world today with this gender ideology, as the Pope always talks about. And Abigail, the timing of our interview, I think, is really important. There's so much in the news, even just the last couple of weeks, that just brings this whole idea, how did we get here in the first place, before we get into the details in your book? And by the way, the book is published by Ignatius Press, and we'll put a link to the archive section at AveMariaRadio.net. Did you ever, with your background in this, and you've studied this and you speak about this quite a bit, Did you ever think we'd be to this point where we're at right now? Thanks for joining us, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. No, I didn't. But through the process of writing this book and trying to figure out how we got here, putting the pieces together made it more clear how we got here. But yeah, I mean, I was in a graduate studies master's degree in the early 2000s at a secular university, and there was just this tacit agreement among everyone there that women are female, right? And that you can't mm-hmm. just kind of appropriate the voice of a woman when you're writing or the space of a woman. You know, you can't just claim a female identity, right? So I would never have predicted at that time that just 15 years later, the very definition of what a woman is would be under such controversy and the source of such debate. So, but if you want, I can start to kind of just give a little bit of a narrative about how this concept has developed.
Sure, please. And I want to ask you about there's a number of stories, especially the one involving, which just drives me crazy. I was telling you during the break, pulling my hair out over the latest ridiculousness in the AP style book, which is the style guide or the style Bible in editing and grammar for journalists. But let's start with kind of an overview. Please go ahead.
Sure. Okay, great. So I trace a twofold revolution that happens in the 20th century. One is a conceptual revolution with this concept of gender entering, especially academic discourse, and then also a contraceptual revolution when how our culture became accepting of contraception. And I think that has really shifted our cultural understanding of what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman. It's no longer about one's procreative potential, but it's really about appearance, behavior, roles, more external things that if that's what you think a woman is, then if you can mimic those roles and that appearance, then it becomes plausible that you can actually just become a woman. So on the conceptual side, the term gender identity was first coined by a psychologist named John Money, and he had this theory that that gender identity or one's sense of self as a boy or a girl was completely socially constructed, completely environmental. It wasn't rooted in biology. So you could take a male child, a female child, and then simply with the right environment, you could raise them as the opposite sex. You could kind of impose a gender identity upon them because it was purely socially constructed. Now, he also did an experiment on two twin boys, one of whom had a botched circumcision, and which he told the parents to raise as a girl. And unfortunately, both of those twins ended up dying, one from an overdose, one from suicide. Mm-hmm. But it took decades for that tragedy to play out. And in the meantime, he began publishing in the 60s and 70s about this concept of gender as a social construct. And that idea was quickly picked up by second wave feminist theory, who then developed this idea of the sex-gender split. So sex is biology, and gender is a social construct. And then when feminism took a postmodern turn in the 80s and 90s, Judith Butler came on the scene, and she began to argue that not just gender is a social construct, but sex itself, the way we think of male and female, is also a construct. So this current understanding of gender is really based on postmodern anti-realism. But what's interesting to me, and this actually links to the AP guidelines, is that you have this kind of classic feminist understanding of gender as a social construct. But in gender identity theory, you will hear people talk about this real sense of self, the self-perception of oneself as a man or a woman, and that's spoken of as something real, more real than the body, and that we have to then change the body to align with this inner self-perception. So in other words, there's a very realist claim that's being made, almost like there's this gendered soul within the self that needs to be accommodated. And that's actually really in tension with the idea that gender is just a social construct, right? Like those mm-hmm. two ideas are contradictory. But what we're seeing now is that both concepts are being affirmed simultaneously. It happened in the AP guidelines. If you mm-hmm. look at their definition of gender, I'm going from memory here, but I think the first sentence of it says something like a social construct that encompasses an individual's roles and behaviors and intrinsic identity or intrinsic sense of self. Well, how can gender be both socially constructed and intrinsic, right?
Right.
That doesn't make any sense. And then in the same AP guidelines, their definition of gender identity then gives that definition. Gender identity is one sense of self as either a man or a woman or neither, and can just be called gender. So it's completely incoherent, right? It offers essentially two conflicting definitions.
Exactly, contradicting themselves, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again and again.
It's really messy. And I think that, I mean, I think a charitable reading of what the AP is trying to do is they're trying to clarify something that simply can't be clarified.
But this in itself, the fact that it can't be clarified, Doctor, should be a clue to journalists putting together this guide, which is basically their Bible for grammar and editing style. Now, I know because I had, 20 years in the secular media, and we had the style guides all over the place. But they should be looking at this and saying, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense what we're putting in here.
Right. It really doesn't make sense. It's very confusing and contradictory and full of kind of inner tension. And even when they say, using the the singular they, and then having a plural verb that pairs with that, but then it also says, but make sure the reader understands we're not talking about multiple people. So it's like giving writers this kind of impossible task to use language that obfuscates while also somehow making sure the reader understands that we're just talking about one person, even though we're using language that is plural.
It's just so ridiculous, and this is just one example. We're talking with Dr. Abigail Favale. She's a PhD, and her book is The Genesis of Gender, a Christian Theory, published by Ignatius Press. And if you go to CatholicNewsAgency.com, I believe they still have that story posted where we're talking about what happened with the Associated Press style book, which is really important in newsrooms, and they keep it there and they grab it. And, they have online versions now, of course, but this is what they use when they edit their copy in terms of titles and understandings of certain phrases and certain groups. It's supposedly the Bible in the newsrooms. This is just one story that is out there. We've gotten to the point now where, and this is what, if we think about last week marking NFP week, if we think about what Pope St. Paul VI gave us in Humanae Vitae, what I think is fascinating is how much he predicted that. He didn't know, obviously, he couldn't see the future, but the Holy Spirit must have been talking to him very deeply, because he did say, and this is the one thing I stress, is that he did say, among many things, that this would affect women the most. And look at what's happening to women. He was talking mainly about contraception and abortion, of course, and this over-sexualization of our culture, Abigail. But look at what's happening to women. And even Bette Midler recently had a lucid moment and said they're trying to wipe us out. And she's someone who is, beloved in this community.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. It's enough that, I feel like when I became a Catholic, I thought, well, I'll kind of hang up my feminist bowling shoes for now, and then all of a sudden I'm like, wait a second, now I'm considered a radical because I think women are female. Like, okay, wow, maybe there actually is something within our culture that is deeply anti-woman. And I can't remember where I was reading something recently that said, that really highlighted like how much Satan hates women. Like,
I was just going to say that.
Hates women.
Mm-hmm.
He hates our life-giving potential. And so as a Catholic now, I'm like, no, we have to have this very robust pro-woman response in the church against this erasure and this unnaming of women that's happening in our culture.
And it is very spiritual, and this is what we have to realize. I always go back to that scene in The Passion of the Christ, the garden scene, the opening scene, and you see the devil portrayed as kind of like this androgynous figure. You can't tell if it's a male or a woman. It was man or a woman. It was so creepy. And then looking back on, if you think about it, we were made in the image and likeness of God, right? Male and female. And so what do we expect in terms of these attacks? This is why we have to understand that there's such a spiritual nature to this as well. We're talking with Abigail Favale. The book is The Genesis of Gender, a Christian Theory. It's published by our friends at Ignatius Press, and we're going to have more with Abigail in just a minute. You can find it at the EWTN Religious Catalog, but also Ignatius.com. I imagine you must be pretty busy as of late before we take a break, Abigail, doing a lot of interviews on this.
Yes, it's true. I have been making the rounds. You're right. There's so much happening all the time. Like every day, another news story comes out about, you know, sometimes it's positive. We can talk about maybe some of the encouraging things that I'm seeing happen, but this conversation is changing so rapidly.
There are some folks overseas, and there were some stories that came out very recently showing that some of these, quote-unquote, medical colleges that were looking at this or performing some of these hormone treatments are now waking up and realizing what they're doing is actually abuse, child abuse, and there's more people coming forward who are now transitioning back, so to speak, because they were not informed about what was going to happen to them. There's so much information that's not getting out there in terms of the medical community, what they're being allowed to do to people without the proper background. So we'll talk more. Again, this is a very, very important book. And we also want to encourage you to look up, if you haven't seen it yet, The Gender Agenda, a documentary produced by EWTN, airing, I believe, as Doug Keck mentioned, very recently or again this week, but EWTN.com for more information. Talking with Dr. Abigail Favalli, The Genesis of Gender, a Christian Theory, from Ignatius Press. We'll be right back. Have you heard the latest and greatest travel news? One more reason to join us on our premier Tease Italy pilgrimage, La Dolce Fede, or The Sweetness of Faith, this November 6th to the 14th. Hi, it's Teresa Tomio, and yes, it's an unbelievable price, some $3,600 for a 7-night land package, including Assisi, Orvieto, Rome, and much more. But now, and here's the latest and greatest news, no reason to worry about having to test to come back home. All testing requirements dropped. No vaccination, no testing, an incredible opportunity to visit tombs of the great saints such as Francis, Claire, Blessed Carlos Acutis, and so much more, except those tests. So call Corporate Travel now, 800-727-1999, or visit us online, AveMariaRadio.net, on our travel page. Call now, the trip is filling up, 1-800-727-1999. Hope to see you in Bella Italia in November.
60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The Eighth Commandment. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. At one level, the reputation a person has is one of their most precious gifts, and to intentionally harm the good reputation of someone is a very grave matter. We can do this often through detraction, by disclosing others' faults without a valid reason, or calumny, just outright lying about other people. Likewise, through rash judgment. This commandment also protects the truth, which is another very, very great good. To lie is to speak something that we know is false with the intention of deceiving others. We ought to be dedicated to the truth. It is the truth that sets people free, while errors and lies entrap people in many difficult and often sinful situations. The Lord asks us to give witness to the truth of the gospel. This commandment therefore asks us to stay dedicated to the truth and to other people's reputation. The Eighth Commandment, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
The book is The Genesis of Gender, a Christian Theory, talking with author Abigail Favalli, and it's a great book and such an important book, published by her friends at Ignatius Press, and please get a copy of it. And it's very informative in terms of how we got here and also how we can respond. Abigail is a PhD, a writer and professor in the McGrath Institute for Church Life at the University of Notre Dame. She's a convert with an academic background in gender studies, and she writes and speaks regularly on topics related to women and gender from a truly Catholic perspective. So in terms of the book, for whom did you write this when you sat down in your heart? I mean, as a fellow author, I always kind of think about folks that I want to reach. Who were you thinking of when you wrote the book, Abigail?
That's a great question. I mean, I was thinking of young people. You know, I mean, my career as a college professor has been spent teaching undergraduates primarily or exclusively. And so I regularly am having these interactions with young adults. And so I was thinking of myself also when I was young and really wrestling with these questions and feeling frustrated about them, but this lack of clarity. But the more I dug into this topic and what's really happening, the more I was shocked at what I found in terms of the lives that are being destroyed, in terms of the low quality and meager evidence that's being put forward to justify radically invasive and risky medical procedures on young people. I mean, it's really scandalous. And it almost sounds like a conspiracy theory when you start to talk about it. I mean, that's how I think a lot of people just don't realize how meager the evidence is, because you often hear people say, well, oh, no, these, it's been proven that these medical interventions are life-saving. And, well, it actually hasn't been proven, you know. And we're seeing, thankfully, a kind of course correction happening in Europe. So a lot of the countries that actually pioneered some of these medical pathways for young people who experience gender dysphoria, like Sweden, for example, they're totally pushing the brakes, because they have had independent reviews of the scientific evidence, and they're realizing that the purported benefits do not outweigh the very clear risks. So Sweden, Finland, late July, in Britain, the National Health Service announced that they're shutting down the Tavistock Clinic, which has been the adolescent gender clinic serving the UK, because an independent review found that they were actually harming vulnerable young people. And so they're going to completely switch to a different care model that's going to be more holistic and that's going to really prioritize mental health support. So these things are happening abroad, but they're not happening here. They're not happening in the U.S. You know, this conversation has gotten so embroiled in political polarization. At the federal level, gender affirmative care is being really mandated.
Well, now we have the whole HHS move that just came out last week, where in the USCCB is responding to that, where, you know, doctors who say this is against their conscience and their religious beliefs are going to be forced, if it goes through, to perform these surgeries.
Right, exactly, because it's being framed as a civil rights issue.
Right.
So, which almost kind of takes it out of the conversation about evidence and science, unfortunately. But there's so much happening all the time that I think just this week the FDA came out and said, oh, actually, puberty blockers for young people is shown to cause brain swelling and vision loss. I mean, this information is coming out all the time.
Right. And you had that young girl down in Florida who testified before state representatives and senators, talking about her experience from, quote unquote, trying to transition from being a girl to, you know, becoming a boy. And she had a double mastectomy, and now she's obviously realizing that it wasn't the answer to her problems. And I'm just using the phrases that they use. She's saying now she's trying to transition back to her original, which she is. It didn't change because of her DNA, but you know what I'm saying. She's going through surgeries now to change back. And she's saying that I'm going to be really very, very vulnerable now for certain types of cancers and what they did. I mean, she's going through great detail and showing a lot of courage, but her story is only getting aired in shows like this or, you know, other conservative outlets. And the general public doesn't see this. There's so much of this. And speaking of what's going on internationally, the Catholic Herald reported a few weeks ago, and this is a headline, an English court rules a Swedish hospital listens and halts dangerous gender dysphoria treatments. Another story, as you were just saying.
Right. So there are countries that are paying attention to the evidence. And so I'm just really hoping and praying that that will begin to happen in America as well. And Canada. Canada is also kind of just full speed ahead, on this stuff.
So in terms of how we deal with this, what is our response? Because it comes up, as you said, as a civil rights issue. And if you saw that ridiculous exchange, I'm so glad Senator Holly asked the question, because the woman took the bait, the professor from California, where they got into this discussion, and she accused him of being homophobic and transphobic because he asked a question. And I want to go on the record that you are instilling fear and blah, blah, blah. So they immediately get on the defensive and accuse you of discrimination and violence. So how do you respond and try to bring truth into this darkness and these lies?
Right. I mean, well, I think that rhetorical tactic is kind of the only one that's left, because you can't actually give a coherent argument. I believe that exchange, because here's a tension, another tension or contradiction that I see. So pro-abortion rhetoric really depends upon framing abortion as a woman's right. So it depends upon reaffirming the connection between women and pregnancy, women and femaleness, right? But then the pro-transitioning, kind of the pro medicalization of gender nonconforming people, that rhetoric depends upon weakening the connection between woman and female. So you have to do these kind of somersaults if you're trying to hold both positions. And so I think that exchange showed that contradiction,
mm-hmm.
and there's no really good way of explaining it, and so the only way is to then
attack.
To accuse of transphobia and then shut down the conversation.
Right, right. Because whenever you bring reason into it, you can't reason, just as you showed with the contradiction in the statements in the latest AP style book. It doesn't make any sense. It makes absolutely no sense. Really, thank you for writing this book, and I really want to have you back on because I have a whole slew of other questions I didn't get to because the time just went by so fast. This is such an important topic. I wanted to talk about the swimmer who was nominated for Woman of the Year. He didn't get it, but this is somebody who identifies now as a female and is going through the surgery. This is just off the charts, out of control, and we have to remember, and Doctor, I know you'll agree as a convert to the faith, that this is a very big spiritual battle as well, correct?
Right, yes. And also that this is real people that are being affected. Like,
yes.
We have to make sure we're not demonizing the people
right.
who are getting caught up in this, right?
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's not the answer, though. The answer is to love them and to show them the truth about who they are, made in the image and likeness of God. Now, there was a report, I don't know if you saw it earlier this year, 60 Minutes actually did, I almost fell off the couch, actually did a decent segment with Leslie Stahl interviewing some of these people who have gone through this quote-unquote transitioning and then made their way back and what happened to them. And this one girl said that if you saw that, she said she had just turned 18, and when she went to get the hormone treatment, to start the hormone treatment, nobody asked her any questions. Nobody did any psychological exams. They just started prescribing the hormone treatment for.
Right. Yeah, you can get hormones on an informed consent basis, which means without physician oversight at Planned Parenthood now. That's their latest.
Oh, that's just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, they're always out there, you know, caring about the people. Pardon my sarcasm. We pray for them, but they need to be exposed. Thank you so much for this great piece of work, The Genesis of Gender, A Christian Theory. Our guest has been author, speaker, and PhD, Dr. Abigail Favale, The Genesis of Gender, A Christian Theory, from Ignatius Press. We'll be right back.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I often go back to my childhood. In church, we love to be reverent, to Christ present in the Eucharist, to Christ on the cross. But I was also impressed by the reverence of my friends in the Salvation Army. They had a little band. And I used to walk past the band on Sunday morning on my way to church. And I was just a child. But I said, you know, they're trying to pray to God. They're showing reverence to God. All this was reverence. Now what do I see? I hear one irreverence after another. And week after week, month after month, the media churns out things that make fun of religion in general and make fun of Christianity in particular, and particularly make fun of the Catholic Church. No class. Absolutely no class.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Good family discussions don't just happen. They take time. Family talk rituals help families be intentional about making real conversations happen. You need to be intentional if you want to get past exchanges like, "What'd you do in school today?"
"Nothing."
Believe it or not, when the relationship between parents and kids is healthy, kids naturally want to open up to mom and dad. Kids want to know that their parents care enough to take time to listen and to understand how they're feeling and what they're going through. When parents make time to listen first, kids are more likely to willingly receive what mom and dad have to say. That's why family talk rituals are an important part of Catholic family life. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Welcome back on a Wednesday morning. Always great to catch up with Joan Lewis, as we do every week. Joan's at Rome. Check out her great blog and all of her wonderful work at EWTN and WordPress.com. Joan's Rome, you'll find her there. We'll remind you of that before we wrap up again. So the Holy Father back in Rome safely, and he gave a very nice Angelus message about his trip and about a reflection on the gospel. What moments are you taking away most of all from Canada, Joan? And thanks for joining us.
Oh, sure. Happy to do it. It's so hard because there were some really astonishing images in astonishing moments in images and words. I think you have to start out with the very first full working day, if you will, in Edmonton. He's just about 100 miles outside of Edmonton in his meeting with the First Nations, the Métis and the Inuit indigenous, and his amazing heartfelt apology, just in such anguished words, expressing indignation and shame and sorrow and so forth. So I think that event, and of course the embracing of the various indigenous peoples in their native dress, at that same ceremony there was that really long, I don't know how many yards long, red banner with the names of all the children who had died in the residential schools where so much abuse had happened. And, I mean, that was the focus of the whole trip, was a heartfelt apology for the Catholic Church's role in running some of the residential, administering some of the residential schools in which abuse did happen. And not all of them, but this was not stressed by a lot of the media, but it wasn't that 100% of those schools were run by Catholic religious orders. There were a number run by the state, and there were a number run by other Christian denominations.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Pope receiving the headdress from the Golden Eagle Chief, that's not given out very often, as you might imagine. It's a sign of respect, of course, and a sign of authority. So what I would love to have known, I'm sure that every single thing that was on the feathers and on the band that went around the Pope's head, that probably all had some, significance for those indigenous peoples. And I think seeing the Pope, and we'll be alluding to or talking about this in a minute anyway, seeing the Pope Teresa in his wheelchair at the cemetery where so many of those, young scholars, young students were buried of the residential schools, and then seeing him at Lake Anne and blessing the lake, and you just saw emotion on the Pope's face, mm-hmm, practically at every time of his journey. And then he had such beautiful words at the end of his trip, because he went from Edmonton in the west, if you think about it, to Quebec, in the east part of Canada, and then all the way up to the northernmost city called Iqaluit, and that was an Inuit city. And that's where he boarded the plane to return to Rome, arriving here on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
But he spoke of the treasure of all those individuals and peoples, the mark they left on him, the faces, smiles, messages, the colors and emotions that touched me deeply. And practically among his parting words were that he returned to Rome greatly enriched by the indigenous realities of this land. So I think we all know, the indigenous peoples know, those of us who read what the Pope said, saw him on TV, I think we know this is just the beginning of a long journey. And the Pope himself called it a penitential journey. So you really could see that the focus of his entire trip was this, to make this apology to these peoples for wrongs committed on indigenous peoples by members of the Catholic Church. And because I don't think he would call a normal trip a penitential journey. Of course, he met, civil officials and religious officials, and as he always does on every trip, he, had a conversation with his Jesuit brothers. So really a lot to think about in that trip. And I mentioned a minute ago, of course, the wheelchair, and which he did use. There were a couple of times when he stood fairly briefly, and only once, I believe, without the use of his cane. And mm-hmm, that was when the headdress was put on him, the feather headdress. So we have to look at that.
One thing I wanted to ask you, I don't mean to interrupt you, but were there other, because it wasn't just the Catholics that were running these schools. Did other Protestant ministries, were they involved
Anglican,
in any of the
believe,
Anglican in the apologies or whatnot?
I have never, I was going to research that before the trip, and then I got into the trip beginning and the trip itself and following things. I don't know. I know that the government itself has set up a commission and is looking into, beyond an apology, is looking into actually compensation for the families of the victims, for the descendants of the victims. As a matter of fact, I mean, there were a couple of people there, a couple of indigenous who actually had been, they were older, who had been years earlier in the schools. But to your precise question, I don't know. That's something interesting. I'm going to look that up.
I mean, I'm glad to see we're taking the lead on it, but I've heard from several from several priests and leaders at various dioceses who listen to the show and are connected with EWTN saying that our reporting has been very good, but not to forget that there were other religions involved and that the church should apologize, which she is doing and stepping up to the plate, but that it's a bigger story and that the media are focusing only on the Catholic involvement here.
Oh, well, yes, because we're the last organization, institution on earth where it's totally legitimate to criticize us, you know. But I also think an important thing would have been to put more stress on the Pope's words. He was there more to apologize for what the Catholic religious orders did than what they actually accomplished. But he had some wonderful words about the good people, about the evangelization, about the caring and the love. So those just kind of were swept under the rug, though, as not being obviously as interesting as an apology for abuse. So, but I'm sure that these peoples are going to be very high on his prayer list in coming days and weeks, and so it, you know, we know what he thinks on a lot of topics. And by the way, we don't have that much time to go into it now, but I mean, the Pope on Wednesdays after a trip, every Pope has always made it it's a tradition by now in the Vatican for a Pope to talk about his trip on the Wednesday audience, which this is, you know, after his return. So, and you can always understand what a Pope feels by his, what he concentrates on, what he focuses on, what for him is important in the audience, in the general audience catechesis. So,
I think the effort was very much appreciated. I really do, and I think it was beautiful. The scene of him at the lake in the wheelchair, flanked by the two clergy, that was just breathtaking and very, very moving.
How he got on the plane the day he left. Mm-hmm. I posted an image by one of EWTN's, of course, great photographers, and it showed the Pope being brought onto the plane by an elevator. So it wasn't walking up the steps in the front as the cardinals and other members of his entourage did, and as he usually does. He was brought, you know, on the other side of the plane and then taken off the same way. So, you know, we now know the Vatican has announced that the Holy Father, in fact, they came out today with the itinerary, the Vatican has announced that the Holy Father will be next month in Kazakhstan at an interreligious meeting in the capital of Nur-Sultan. And he's going to be there September 13, about half a day by the time he arrives, and then all day the 14th and a very long day, two-thirds of a day on September 15th. So it's a pretty big schedule, and you know, between now and then, is anything going to change? I mean, Teresa, this Friday it's going to be 3 months, September. Is this Friday the 5th? You know, it's going to be 3 months that he's been in a wheelchair. And he talked about that. We, as you know, it's been all over the place, TV and the written media, about the journalists no longer fearful of asking the Holy Father about his health and what he's going to do. And he's given like three or four interviews in recent weeks. But I think that probably one of the most telling was one in which he talked about on the plane. He answered the Mexican journalist, Valentina Alizraki. He answered her, and she said, we assume this trip to Canada was a test regarding your health for what you called this morning, in other words, before they got on the plane, physical limitations. So she asks him about future trips, and he says pretty much what he said in the other interviews. I don't know. I don't think I can continue with the same pace of trips as before. At my age and with this limitation, I have to spare myself a bit to be able to serve the church. But on the other hand, I can also think about the possibility of stepping aside. With all honesty, this is not a catastrophe. It's possible to change popes. It's possible to change. There's no problem. But I think I have to limit myself a bit with these exertions. Knee surgery for me is not an option. So he goes on to talk. I know he has a huge problem with anesthesia. So the idea of surgery and anesthesia, just, you know, the Pope is negative on that. So he has opened the door. I just read you one brief thing he said in a recent interview. And that was in front of all the media. There were 80 journalists on the plane. So, you know, it's in his thought. Maybe you should see his schedule for Kazakhstan, you know. And taxing, meeting, huge number of meetings and things. And if we see him in a wheelchair in a month, I think we've got even more questions we have to ask, you know. In a month and a half. And then,
but
of course,
what, we're not getting the answers from the Vatican press office, so are we?
No, that's a, exactly. So, and yet, they publicize a trip. You know, he just gets off the plane. They announce he's going to go to Kazakhstan for this interreligious meeting. And it's something that's high on his agenda. We had known about this, but today they come out with the actual, all the logistical info for journalists and all the specifics of the trip, which I'll be having in my blog this afternoon. So, you know, but it takes courage. It takes an infinite amount of
energy. And I mean, it's
energy, not letting yourself be kept down because of a physical, limitation. So, because we can see by the clarity of his responses, even like the interview on the plane, questions, you know, on various different issues. And he doesn't have notes in front of him or anything. So, you know, the mind is still working.
Yeah, so. I thought the images from Canada will be ones that will stay in our minds, and not just the emotions and the beauty and his looks on his face. You could see the real remorse. And I think it was something that we needed to do. However, again, the way the media covered, I would have liked to see the media ask some questions about those who are also responsible for it. We shouldn't be the only ones stepping up to the plate, because there were a number of different issues, apparently, that were going on there. But I'm glad we did it, because we do have to, there's a lot to apologize for, and a lot, of course, to have this whole penitential journey, which he was talking about, which is super important. Joan, we're out of time again, as always, but great discussion. Give us your address online for your blog.
Just go to Google and look for Joan's Rome. Or you can do jonesrome.wordpress.com.
And I'll tell you what, the blog in which you were included from Tease Italy is still going strong. Folks are still asking for it. And you are a rock star, sister.
My limoncello.
Your limoncello. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Our own Joan Lewis from EWTN, Joan's Rome. We'll be right back on a Wednesday. Stay tuned.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Everyday living. Effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA. Or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You remember the time I said on the air, go to confession.
And when you're done, go out and have a big ice cream soda. Celebrate. And a man wrote to me, he says, you know, I hadn't gone to confession in 30 years. Do you mind if I went and had a pizza? I said, oh, have 20 pizzas.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
I hope you know how much we appreciate your listenership here at the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, as well as the Ave Maria Radio Network. And we always say we are all about the resources. So just remember, anything you hear daily on this show, you can check out. You can go to, for example, the EWTN Religious Catalog through EWTN.com. You may also go to the archive section of Catholic Connection at AveMariaRadio.net. And all the resources are there for you. This is also a great way, by the way, to witness. Sometimes if you're challenged by a friend or a loved one on a particular topic and you hear us talking about an issue, right, that has come up, especially, right, over the holidays or a special occasion, you can go to or tell your friend or family member with whom you're discussing something to go to one of these sites and to listen to a program, or you can send them to the link to the program and they could hear it for themselves. That's why we call Catholic Radio part of being a member of the Shy Evangelist family, right? Because we do the evangelization for you, and you can pass it on. We'll talk to you in the next edition of Catholic Connection. Thanks again for listening.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.